For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. At least 24 students and teachers have died in a fire at a school in Kuala Lumpur. It's thought the victims were trapped in their dormitory by window grills at the Islamic school in the Malaysian capital. A public inquiry into the Grenfell Tower blaze has opened in London with a promise it will be wide-ranging and exhaustive. The fire in an apartment block in the British capital killed at least 80 people in June. The inquiry will look into its cause and rapid spread, as well as the role of the local governments and regulations on high-rise buildings. Sir Martin Moore-Bick heads up the inquiry.
We are acutely aware not only that so many people died or were injured in the fire, but that many of those who survived have been severely affected by their experiences. We are also conscious that many have lost everything and even now are dependent on others for many of their daily needs. The inquiry cannot undo any of that, but it can and will provide answers to the pressing questions of how a disaster of this kind could occur in 21st century London.
US President Donald Trump's used Twitter to deny reaching a deal with Democrats on young undocumented migrants. Congressional Democratic leaders had announced they'd come to an agreement with the president over so-called Dreamers, which they said excluded his proposed wall at the Mexican border. UK Prime Minister Theresa May is to deliver an important speech on Brexit next Friday. It's being billed as her most substantial intervention in the process since January, when she set out her government's negotiating position. Our UK correspondent Natalie Powell reports.
The UK Prime Minister will give an update on the negotiations so far and emphasise her wish for the UK and the EU to have a deep and special partnership after Brexit. Florence has been chosen deliberately because of its historical trading power, and the UK government wants to imply that Britain would be leaving the EU, but not Europe. This is expected to be the most important and substantial update on Brexit since a speech by the Prime Minister 9 months ago. Natalie Powell, London.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and his Indian counterpart Narendra Modi have laid the foundation stone as work begins on India's first high-speed train. Rebecca Bundon reports from Mumbai.
The launch of India's multi-billion dollar bullet train project is the highlight of the Japanese Prime Minister's visit to the state of Gujarat in western India. Expected to be completed in 2022, the high-speed train will run more than 500 kilometres between the commercial hub of Ahmedabad in Gujarat and India's financial capital, Mumbai. The project is largely being funded by a soft loan from Japan. Mr. Abe's visit comes against the backdrop of a recent standoff between China and India over a border dispute. Defence and other investment deals are expected to emerge from the trip. Rebecca Bundon, Mumbai.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Ollie. Welcome to the programme to you. Hope you're well. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Show. It's the 14th of September 2017. Hope you've had a good day. Got two terrific guests lined up for you between now and, well, the end of the programme, I suppose. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Thanks for tuning in. Let's do it then.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, coming up this hour, Michael Rivero. We speak to Mike every couple of months. It's been a couple of months since he was on. Terrific journalist and broadcaster, of course, based in Oahu in Hawaii. We'll get the lowdown on the Trump story, the undocumented migrant children, migrant workers, the children of illegal immigrants, that's right, and much more with Michael this hour. And in the second hour, Dr. Nick Begich, the academic and the author, the co-author of Angels Don't Play That Harp, joins me. It's been a long time since Nick was on. We're going to be talking about why there is such a level of disconnect between people. Why increasingly greater numbers of people cannot make an emotional connection with their fellow human beings. Why is that happening, and what part does technology play in that? Nick Begich joins me in the second hour from Anchorage in Alaska. Anchorage in Alaska. Sounds lovely, doesn't it? Anchorage in Alaska. One of those places I wouldn't mind visiting. Wouldn't mind visiting at all. We're live on davidicke.com, fabradiointernational.com. Check out Fab Radio 2. The great Paul Ripley was with me today. And it was great catching up with Paul, engineering work, Patrick. Everybody was all kicking off here at the, what do I call it? The Richie Allen Show Towers. Yeah, we won't call it that. But it's been a good old day. And do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Earlier on today, I took part in the new Dot Connector series for, well, it isn't new. David does a weekly video cast for subscribers to davidicke.com. There's a free, there's two aspects to that. There's a free broadcast for people, and then there's an exclusive broadcast for subscribers of davidicke.com. And for the foreseeable future, I'll be joining in with David once a week, going over the news, the big news of the week, the newspapers and all of that, asking David questions about these stories, getting the sort of in-depth analysis you don't get on mainstream media. So I enjoyed that today. Looking forward to doing that again in the future. Subscribers, to subscribe to that even. It's like I don't have teeth today. I've struggled all day to get my words out. If you want to see that regularly, go to davidicke.com and subscribe. 6 minutes past the hour. Only a couple of things I want to get into before Michael Rivero joins us. I spoke about George Hook yesterday, the Irish broadcaster and the rugby union analyst. Last Friday, he covered the rape story about the girl who got drunk and was taken advantage of at a hotel, allegedly by a former member of the British Olympic swim team. Two men allegedly took advantage of her. It's a very serious story. Obviously, George Hook said clearly last Friday the girl didn't deserve it and didn't ask for it, importantly. But he did ask, why don't we as people have a discussion about personal responsibility? And as you know, the Progressive started their Twitter storm, the media piled on in, and his own colleagues at Newstalk have asked for him to be fired. Victim blaming, they said. Now, as I speak to you, Hook hasn't yet been fired. Hopefully he won't be. Just to reiterate, he never blamed the girl. And I do believe it's got more to do with the fact that he has supported the families of young women who believe they were injured by the HPV, human papillomavirus vaccine, otherwise known as Gardasil. George Hook stuck up for those families and for the mother's rights to ask questions, and he took on Ireland's HSE, the Health and Safety Executive, and he took on the government. I think that has a lot to do with it. But anyway, leaving that aside, it rolls on. Paul Murphy is a socialist TD, a member of parliament. TD means Chochta Dála, which means member of parliament, in Dublin. And he's part of the Solidarity Party. He's a politician. Now, I invited Murphy on the programme today. I contacted Murphy and asked him, would he come on the programme? Because Murphy contacted Newstalk. This is a politician now, mind. And he said, no member of Solidarity would speak to Newstalk until George Hook was sacked. So now you have politicians saying these are supposed to be the arbiters of free speech, the defenders of free speech. You've got politicians contacting radio stations now saying, if you don't sack this guy, none of our party, none of the executive, none of the members will speak with you again until that man isn't there anymore. Identitarianism, madness, utter madness, and it's contemptible. It's so disgusting. Now, I invited Murphy on the programme not to abuse him and shout at him, but to ask him what the hell is a politician calling for somebody to be fired for over what is basically nothing other than an opinion, agree with it or not. I did find out that Murphy, the TD, the politician, and Hook have previous. Murphy was arrested a few years ago as part of water rate protests in Ireland. I support Murphy on that and everyone else standing up to the tyranny of the Irish government and Irish water. But 2 years ago they had a car crash interview. Hook didn't do very well now in the interview. But I think a little bit of revenge, I think, has something to do with Paul Murphy asking for George Hook to be sacked. It's disgraceful. I think it's disgraceful anyway. Moving on, 10 minutes past the hour. Donald Trump supporters are angry. They're very angry. Don't make me angry, Mr. McGee. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Trump's alt-right supporters, whatever they call themselves, the ones who cried tears of joy when he was elected, who said, this is it. He's going to stand up to the man. He's going to stand up to the man. Well, they're cheesed off today, dear listener. They're cheesed off. Trump told media at the White House that he is close to a deal, a bipartisan deal, with the Democrats to protect young undocumented migrants known these days as Dreamers. They're not the only ones. Trump did a deal, or apparently has done a deal, he says not yet, with top Democrats Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and the right are hopping mad. So this is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA, and it will allow around 800,000 people to stay in America and also give them temporary permits to work and to study, right? Now, I've no problem one way or the other with this, but last week, Trump said he would cancel the program, right? This is typical of what we've seen under Trump. Now, Sean Hannity is an idiot-in-chief at Fox News. He's crying. One of Trump's biggest fans, he's crying. He's blaming weak Republicans and not Trump himself, the ultimate flip-flopper, to use their own term. Do you want to hear what Trump had to say a short time ago? This is the great one, explaining to the media exactly what's going on.
Well, we're working on a plan subject to getting massive border control. We're working on a plan for DACA. People want to see that happen. You have 800,000 young people brought here, no fault of their own. So we're working on a plan. We'll see how it works out. But we're going to get massive border security as part of that. And I think something can happen. We'll see what happens. But something will happen. Well, we want to get massive border security, and I think that both Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, I think they agree with it, but so we met last night with, as you know, Schumer, Pelosi, and a whole group, and I think we're fairly close, but we have to get massive border security.
Is there anything?
Oh, I think he's on board. Yeah, Mitch is on board. Paul Ryan's on board. We all feel, look, 92% of the people agree on DACA. But what we want is we want very, very powerful border security.
Okay? Yeah, I don't know who decided to do the interview right next to the engines of, I'm presuming it was Air Force One. It sounded like an airplane anyway, so apologies for the audio, not my fault. Trump said 92% or 95% of people are behind it, but Trump himself was vehemently opposed to it only a week ago. But don't tell that to Trump supporters. They're likely to go into meltdown. Identity politics. Identitarianism. The inability to criticise something which you hold dear to yourself. The inability to be self-analytical and self-critical. Jesus, maybe I was wrong to think that Trump was the man who was going to go after the establishment. Jesus, maybe I was wrong. These are words that don't exist in the vocabulary of the progressive, of the lunatic lefty, or the rabid right-wingers. No ability to look introspectively. None whatsoever. Now, the inquiry into the Grenfell Tower fire has opened. You might have heard this on the news at the beginning of the programme. Its chairman promised it would provide answers to how the disaster could have happened in 21st century London. The controversial Sir Martin Moore-Bick said he wouldn't shrink away from making recommendations that could lead to prosecutions. I'll believe it when I see it. Grenfell survivors say they still feel that they haven't been listened to. This is from Martin Moorbeek today.
It's right that at the very outset of the inquiry, I should express on my own behalf and on behalf of all members of the inquiry team the dismay and sadness we feel at the loss of life, devastation and injury caused by the fire. We are acutely aware not only that so many people died or were injured in the fire, but that many of those who survived have been severely affected by their experiences. We are also conscious that many have lost everything and even now are dependent on others for many of their daily needs. The inquiry cannot undo any of that, but it can and will provide answers to the pressing questions of how a disaster of this kind could occur in 21st century London, and thereby, I hope, provide a small measure of solace.
So why is Sir Martin Moorbeek controversial? Well, as I mentioned on this programme several times in the past, as a judge, he once actually upheld a decision. He upheld a decision to rehome a woman whose house had burned down, to rehome her 50 miles away, despite hearing evidence from everybody, doctors, social workers, her neighbours, the police, God and Sonny Jesus, everybody came forward to say the woman was alone, her friends and neighbours were vital to her well-being, and that they helped care for her because she had a debilitating long-term illness. Bick said, it's okay, I hear all of that, but I'm still going to rehome her 50 miles away from her neighbourhood. So he isn't a man suitable for an inquiry that's really about social cleansing as much as it is about the dead people. And I don't mean in any way to be disrespectful to the dead. The inquiry should be about the ongoing social cleansing programme as part of the Hunger Games Society, but of course it won't be. And finally, for the minute, at least 50 people have been killed in two attacks in southern Iraq. A suicide bomber detonated a vest and gunmen fired inside a restaurant near Nasiriyah, which is the capital of the Dhikar province. Soon afterwards, another car bomb exploded at a nearby checkpoint. At least 50 are dead. Islamic State carried out the attacks. Shia Muslim pilgrims, including Iranians, are among the dead, and more than 80 people were injured. Now, just in case you were wondering, there are no candlelit vigils planned for London, Manchester, Paris or Brussels. Facebook's feature where you identify yourself as safe hasn't been activated. There are no memes saying I am Nasiriyah or I am Iraq. Kay Burley, Jeremy Thompson and Sarah Jane Mee are not flying to Iraq to present 3 days of news from there. And even though 2.5 times more people died today than died in Manchester, politicians are not going on television to say that they stand with Iraq or Nasiriyah or Afghanistan, and politicians are not going on television to say we will never be defeated. And as far as we know, at the Richie Allen Show, there are no plans to hold a benefit concert for the people of Nasiriyah anytime soon. Just in case you were wondering.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device. Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We're offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's vibration.com/Richie. Thank you.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back. Bethany tweets me. Hello, Bethany. She says, Richie, ridiculous that people can no longer speak their minds for fear of losing their job when others have a dark agenda. I was thinking today, Bethany, even if George Hook said the girl has nobody to blame but herself, which he did not say, he said the opposite of that. But even if he said that, is that a sackable offence just because it pisses people off? You know, back in the day when I was producing award-winning talk radio, I don't say that to big myself up, by the way, award-winning talk radio. The reason I say that is because it was award-winning, because my presenter could say things that offended people. When my presenter said things that offended people, what do you think I did as his producer? Let me tell you what I did. I got those whom were offended and I put them on the programme and I got them to stick it to him. Get on there and give it to him, I used to tell them. I used to tell people, get on there and give it to my presenter. Of course, Hook shouldn't have been subjected to the nonsense he's been subjected to. And Paul Murphy is a world-class moron. This socialist TD who ignored me today, contacting News Talk and saying Solidarity will not appear on News Talk programming again until such time as Hook is sacked. Socialist my arse. Anyway. Hello, Shona, who says, Richie, did you have to subject me to Trump's voice? I can't stand it. Fair enough. Andy and Dean Smith, good evening and thanks for tweeting and listening to the Richie Allen Show. Michael Rivero will be phoning me in a couple of minutes' time, live from Oahu in Hawaii. In the meantime, if there's anything you'd like me to put to him or any contribution you'd like to make to the programme, you need only tweet at Richie Allen Show. It's the easiest way to do it. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And I will read those tweets as they come in. That is a promise.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, bushy blonde hair, surfing USA. Ooh.
Beach Boys Surfing USA, 25 minutes past the hour. First guest is a regular visitor to the programme. You know all about him now and his NASA endeavours and his child actor endeavours and his movie making endeavours. He's a brilliant broadcaster and journalist based in Oahu in Hawaii. Check out whatreallyhappened.com. That's his website, which for many, many years now has been sifting through the detritus of nonsense of mainstream media and giving you a more accurate picture. He also presents the What Really Happened radio show, which we endorse wholeheartedly here. Michael, aloha, welcome.
Aloha, thank you for having me again.
It's great to talk with you. I'm in good form today. I want to talk about, in a few minutes, Hillary Clinton's book launch and evidence that Hillary Clinton has never read nor ever seen 1984. We'll come to that a bit later on, right? But in the meantime, the BBC are reporting this afternoon, my friend, that Trump supporters across the country are up in arms over the Dreamers. The proximity, apparently they're very close, the Trump administration, to agreeing a deal with Democrats to protect young undocumented migrant workers, allegedly. And there is some evidence on social media. Some of Trump's more ardent and vociferous supporters believe that he's going against, yet again, something he said he wouldn't do. What do you think, Mike? What's going on?
Yeah, there's no question that Trump has been a disappointment to a lot of people who supported him. He's dealing with the Democrats on immigration, illegal immigrants, refugees, the Dreamers, certainly the war agenda. He's going full bore on that. And it does seem like he's been co-opted or controlled or corralled or however the establishment, the deep state, the narcocracy, whatever you want to call it, definitely have him under their control now.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I suppose rather than waste time speculating about, you know, when that control began and how it manifested, we just have to accept that he is just another, you know, puppet of the cabal and just live with that. What do you think, Michael, it might do for the mindset of those who really, really, really invested their emotions in him? And we're obviously talking about Americans. We're talking about American men and women who maybe are struggling. Their job isn't paying very well, or they don't have a job and they're decent and they want to get on some sort of ladder to better themselves. What's it going to do for the mindset of people who really believed he was the one?
Well, it's definitely costing him support. And at the rate things are going, Trump is probably going to be a single term president. We know that Robert Mueller and Hillary Clinton, they still hold out dreams that they're going to be able to impeach him and put in Mike Pence in his place. The vice president promoted into his place. But it's terrible to see all this infighting. But yeah, Trump has really let his base down, his base that overcame all that massive election fraud on Hillary's part to put him in that Oval Office. And he's not moving fast enough on his commission for election integrity, although they're making some headway with that and they're getting some information on that. But at the rate things are going, support for Trump in 2020 is going to be lukewarm at best.
Mike, what, before we talk about Clinton, and I'm intrigued about your thoughts that Trump might only see, he might only see to 2022 and that'll be it for him. We'll talk about that in a second. The idea, despite the tyranny of these people, the Obamas and the W. Bushes and all that, Is there some good policy in saying to people, the sons and daughters of undocumented and illegal migrants, that will offer you some protection? Is there some decency? Is there some rationale in that, Mike?
Well, not really, because everyone's trying to say, you know, should we punish the children for the sins of the parents? Well, I'm sorry, but the parents are the ones who stepped across that border illegally. And we shouldn't be opening up a door for them to basically come up with their kid and say, look, we've got this kid here. And, you know, therefore, we're going to be allowed to stay. I see all of this immigration, refugees as part of a grand global plan to sort of diffuse and dilute our sense of a cultural identity, our sense of a historical identity, where we come from. And we're seeing all over Europe where there are so many refugees coming into parts of Europe, they've stopped being Europe. And I think this is deliberately part of the globalist agenda, so that coming generations won't have a strong sense of who they are, where they come from. They're not even going to be sure what bathroom they should be using. And people without a strong sense of self are much easier to control than people who have an understanding of their place in history and culture.
You and I agree wholeheartedly on that. There is no but from me. There is no but. So I'll say, however, those people, Mike, and we see it with a lot of refugees in Europe. Now, I know amongst the refugees are some dodgy, well, they're a lot worse than dodgy people. But those fleeing tyranny and those fleeing poverty, God love them, Mike, they're victims of this policy, of this agenda, which you and I both agree on. And I have a bit of sympathy for them, even though I know they are pawns and they are being used to destroy national sovereignty, to destroy identity, the way you described. But I have that bit of sympathy for them. And I'm telling you, Rivero, I've known you a few years, and beneath that hard exterior, you have a bit of sympathy for them as well.
I have sympathy for them because they are being victimized by this grand globalist plan. And some of them are very nasty criminals. I mean, right now it's estimated that only about 20% of the people who have flooded into Europe actually qualify to be granted amnesty status. And normally when somebody wanted to seek asylum in a country, they would approach and make an application, and then they would wait outside the country until the application was accepted. And in this case, they reversed that. They just said, anybody who thinks they might want to live here, come on in. We're going to open the borders. They deliberately spread the people out to make it harder to basically go on out and track them all down for deportation. But 80% of the people in Europe, and presumably the numbers are similar here in the United States, they're not fleeing violence. Yes, they're economic refugees, but a lot of them have been lured to the U.S. In Europe by promises of lots of free stuff that you're going to be given when you get here. You're going to get free housing. You're going to get this, you're going to get that. And these refugees arrive at their destination. And of course, the promises are not being kept. I mean, they are getting a lot of assistance from the various governments. Here in the United States right now, we're seeing these undocumented people are being given better treatment than actual legal citizens. And that rankles a lot of American people right now who are having to pay ultimately the cost for all of this. So most of those people really don't qualify for asylum status in Europe and the United States, and they really ought to be going home. Again, I agree, yes, they're victims. Now, the good news is apparently a lot of the Syrians, now that it looks like Assad is going to hang on to Syria and kick the U.S. out, a lot of the Syrian refugees in Europe have now started on the way back home there as well. So that situation is reversing itself.
Absolutely. I saw Rex Tillerson and Boris Johnson in London today talking about Syria. And when Syria came up, Tillerson looked very subdued, which is a good thing. Things haven't gone to plan for them in Syria. I just want to endorse what you said there about promises being made to people in countries that have been destroyed by Western intervention. Michael is absolutely right to say that. We know that Soros-controlled NGOs, you know, make these promises to people and enable people to leave these countries and go to places based on this utopian idea. And when they get there, it's very different. And that's when the problems begin. It's just a real pity, because they and we are victims of this globalist cabal and what they want to do. It's a pity that we can't join forces against them. My God, what a different world we would have then. Patricia Braunschweiler says, sorry, Mike, but Trump's base was stupid enough to believe that he would be their saviour. That's Patricia on Twitter. And JP, who's in Manchester, Patricia's in Switzerland, JP's in Manchester, tweets, Trump is owned by the banks. We should get used to it. War is profitable, and most pensions are linked with shares of arms sales companies. That's JP on Twitter there. Mike, do you want to make a comment on that before we jump all over Hillary's book? Go ahead.
Well, certainly had Trump had the election successfully stolen from him, we would be much further along the way to wars. And I don't think the American people actually want war, because, yes, war is profitable for the defense contractors, and the private central banks have a rich harvest of debt. And war is the richest harvest of debt for these private central banks. And that's why they like to kick these things up every once in a while. Because as nations finish paying off the debt from the last major war, the bankers start agitating to get a new one going, and that's kind of where we are. Plus, you have this historical pattern of the United States government, which, when it gets itself into a hopeless economic mess, it gets involved in a world war, not so much to correct the economy as to have something to blame for it or something to distract from it. So you have this pattern of the economic crash of 1907, U.S. gets into World War I, economic crash of 1929, U.S. gets into World War II, and the crash of 2008, and here you have the U.S. that has invaded or drone struck or regime changed numerous countries over the last 17, 18 years now.
Brilliant stuff, Mike. Hillary Clinton has published memoirs, or at least a book about the last few years and the election. It's being reported widely this evening here in the UK that a book launch event or a book signing event in New York, I believe, just descended into absolute chaos, with people reporting they were treated incredibly badly by Clinton herself and by the organisers of the event. Not to mention that the reviews of the book have, if you didn't know how much of a criminal, a murderer, a paedophile apologist that Hillary Clinton is, if you didn't know that, you would think the reviews were hysterical, but they're not. What do you make of this book, Mike, and the events that we've been told about this afternoon?
Well, Hillary is still out there craving public attention. A lot of people, including much of the Democratic leadership, think it's time for her to just shut the heck up, get over the fact that she lost, and go, you know, fade quietly into history. But Hillary is still out there. She's still talking about finding a way to get Donald Trump. As for her book, it is basically a screed that blames everybody in the world for her election loss, except, of course, the mistakes that she made. She is still out there insisting she did not make any mistake. They had a well-run campaign. It was just that all these people were against her. And she's blaming white people for her election loss. She's blaming women who didn't vote for her for the election loss. She's blaming Breitbart News and InfoWars. And for all I know, I'm in there somewhere as well. But don't. I'm not going to bother buying the book.
Don't buy the book.
It's basically... Hillary just out there making excuses, and I think there's something like 41 different entities and individuals that she has lined up and said it's all of these people's fault. You know, we had a tremendous media disadvantage because of Breitbart News was out there. And that was ridiculous, because the regular corporate media was fully on board with Hillary's campaign. The Podesta email leak revealed that there were regular meetings between the Hillary Clinton campaign and the owners of the big corporate media. They were rooting for her all last year. They were bashing Donald Trump. So for Hillary to sit back now and say that the media was against her, she's either delusional, or she just hopes that the reader isn't going to, remember exactly what was going on last year. But apparently VIP tickets for these signing events are going for $1,000. And I'm sure there's still a lot of people who are caught up in idol worship of Hillary Clinton that are going to show up. But a lot of the people who are showing up to the book signings, it's a chance to actually meet her in real life and hit her with some pretty hard questions, yeah. Like what happened with Seth Rich, where the missing 33,000 emails. And Hillary Clinton does have a lot of security around her, and the security have been told anybody who asks a difficult question is immediately to be thrown out the door. And that has been going on quite a bit. So you need to keep in mind that on the very day it was released, the price of the book has already been marked down 40%. They're not expecting it to sell. Right. And over on Amazon's webpage for the book, the negative reviews are being deleted by Amazon almost as fast as they're put on up there. But a lot of people have noticed it now, and they've screen capped the negative reviews. And then you go back and you look, and Amazon is only allowing positive reviews. I think they're concerned they're going to take a bath on this one.
My actress friend Jean Anne in Dublin has just endorsed what you said there about Amazon, There's no doubt about that. Do you know what's funny, Mike? You can see Clinton's press conferences, if she keeps herself in the public eye, they'll eventually descend into the spoof Mayor Joe Quimby Simpsons type press conferences, where the press will eventually get so sick of her that they'll start doing their job and start shouting at her, "Where are the bodies? Where are the bodies, Hillary?" I mean, this is one of the most despicably evil characters on planet Earth. I do understand as well, according to a number of newspapers who used to support Clinton, but have had enough of her, the Washington Examiner and others, she doesn't get 1984. And basically, she's tried to explain through the pages of her book that the lesson to be learned, Mike, from Orwell's great tome is that we should trust the government and the media. Right. So she's obviously never read the book, right?
Well, you know, she's either on drugs or needs to be. That was a pretty bizarre statement. And at this point, it's obvious that she probably did not actually read the book. She just read the liner notes on it, or maybe she caught a part of the movie. But again, this is a woman who habitually lies about everything. She used to tell people she was named for Sir Edmund Hillary.
That's right.
Who conquered Everest. But that happened when Hillary was already 6 years old. So it's just always putting out these lies to make herself look good and attack her enemies. And she has turned into a caricature of herself. And it's kind of sad and it's kind of tragic. And the Democratic leadership are trying to find some way they can get her to just shut up and go away, because she has become an albatross around the neck of the Democratic Party going into next year's midterms and going into 2020. But she is a very dangerous person. She has a lot of information over other people. So they can't put too much pressure on her. Or she could, like, really just totally flip out and start, you know, saying where all the dead bodies are and how they got to be dead
Absolutely
bodies.
Absolutely right, yeah. She's privy to a lot of information that would bring down a lot of people. There's no doubt about that. Michael Rivero is our guest this hour. We've got Mike for another 10 minutes or thereabouts. He's got a program to prepare as well. He's in Oahu in Hawaii. Check out whatreallyhappened.com, a website I've been using since I started making programs like this as a research source. It's terrific. whatreallyhappened.com and the What Really Happened radio show. There's not very many shows like it anywhere in the world. Mike, some learned men and women now, it must be said, learned men and women, not your, you know, screaming mad conspiracy screamers, but some learned folks have been looking at the weather systems that have been battering the Caribbean and Florida and the East Coast. And, you know, people like Piers Corbin, Jeremy Corbyn's brother, the meteorologist, has suggested that it's possible to not only create weather patterns, but to accelerate them. So to engineer a storm that's already there and make it worse. Piers actually said, to be fair to him, that solar activity was the real reason for the storms that we've seen. In fact, he's gone on the record again as saying the storms are definitive proof that solar activity, solar flares, and not man-made CO2 is what's driving climate. But he did say that we know about these, you know, weather warfare agreements made many years ago, and we know that companies are experimenting, that these might have been accelerated and manipulated. Michael, what do you think? Absent of any proof, what do you think?
Well, the if you really were to mathematically total up the amount of energy in one of those storms, I mean, when they're 400 miles across and at the center you've got these 100-mile-an-hour winds, that is a lot of energy that we simply do not have the technology to direct and control, not even with nuclear weapons. So there's been a lot of talk about weather warfare. Most of it concentrates on the idea of cloud seeding to force clouds to drop rain one place to put a potential enemy in the rain shadow and cut off their water supply. But it takes so long to accomplish that, it's really not a practical, effective system of warfare. Now, what causes storms is a temperature differential, okay? And it doesn't mean necessarily that the world is getting hotter. In fact, the latest indications are we're getting cooler. But if you look at the outer gas giant planets in our solar system, you will see storms there as big as our entire world, at temperatures hundreds of degrees below zero, because there's a little bit of warmth, 100 degree below zero, and then as you get closer out to space, it goes down to minus 120, and that's enough of a differential to start forming these storms. And the same thing is happening here on Earth. Now, the total number of hurricanes over the last 50 years had actually been in decline. It's just the luck of the draw that we are getting so many storms over in the Atlantic. And this year was actually, it still is, a rough season in the Pacific. We had about two or three hurricanes came close to us earlier in the summer. And now there are three other major storms over there off the coast of Mexico. They're not heading toward us. But again, we know that the storms that form off the coast of Mexico are driven by the El Nino current. We now know the El Nino current is actually generated by undersea volcanoes. See, anytime one of these global warming people comes on over and says human activity is warming the ocean by thus and such degrees, the first thing I'll ask him is, how many active volcanoes and thermal vents are there on the floors of the world's ocean?
Absolutely.
And they'll say, I don't know. And I said, don't worry, it's a trick question. Nobody knows.
No.
And they just discovered another 190 on the floor of the Arctic. So if you don't know how much heat is being added to the ocean from geothermal activity and you can't compensate for that, then any attempt to say human activity is warming the ocean by thus and such, it's just a scientific wild-ass guess.
It's absolutely
right,
Dad. What
we call a swag.
Absolutely right, Dad. And some of the world's leading geologists have said for years we sequester CO2 in the oceans. They've talked about this volcanic activity on the sea floor as well, Mike. We have less CO2 now in our atmosphere than we did, you know, over thousands of years when we had some very, very extreme climate shifts. It's complete nonsense. I will say this, though, Mike, on the ability to manipulate the stuff, and you said you're not sure the technology exists to develop that amount of energy. We've got to concede, though, you and I, that we don't, while we have maybe a little bit more of an insight than our counterparts in the mainstream media as to what's going on, we don't know for sure that they haven't developed these technologies. We can't be 100% sure they haven't. And that's where, you know, again, academics coming on this program have said, yes, it's feasible in very, very, very black operations and budgets going back 25, 30, 40 years. It could be feasible for these people to affect the jet stream, to affect the ionosphere, to do the sorts of things that can turn storms into, well, the sort of catastrophic events that we've seen. I think we have to be open-minded about it.
Then let me ask you a very, very simple question. If this technology exists, why didn't they use it to steer Harvey and Irma and these other storms away from land? There's a lot of room out there in the middle of the Atlantic. That's where Jose is wandering around right now. If they had the ability to affect these storms, why did they not use it to save all this damage, destruction, and death that we've seen over the last few weeks?
And the answer to that is, if you want to let me answer that, because I will answer that, and you go, yeah. Well, the answer is in the question. Maybe those responsible for the destruction that they caused wanted the destruction that they caused. The destruction might have been the plan all along.
Okay, so you're going to blame the Russians or the Iranians?
Oh, no,
for
not
this?
The Russians. Jesus Christ, no, not at all.
Okay.
No, not the Russians and the Iranians, no. But those behind what we've come to call, well, David kind of phrased, the Hunger Games society. Those who want to impoverish people, move people away from the coasts, move them away from rural areas into super cities. That agenda, Mike, that's not Russian or Iranian. That's something far more sinister. It's just a possibility. I'm just throwing it out there, that's all.
Okay, well, I will share with you one example where I have seen a hurricane diverted, and it did happen early this year when we had a couple of pretty big hurricanes heading into the Hawaiian archipelago. But as they came across the southern part of the Big Island, where all the volcanoes are, there's a huge thermal uplift there. And you could see it on the satellite pictures. It literally tore those storms apart. So by the time they got over here to Oahu, it was just a lot of rain. But again, you're dealing with an entire volcano full of lava that is just pouring heat into the atmosphere. And we can't equal that energy output with any of our known technologies.
It's fair to say that. I'm not going to argue with you with any of our known technologies. I just, you know, as time goes on, Mike, I just suspect that we don't even have the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you're a man who's worked in Hollywood. I remember Will Smith saying some years ago when he made that film with Gene Hackman, Enemy of the State, and some Pentagon or CIA guy consulted on the film to help them with, you know, some sexy technology for some of the surveillance scenes. And he said to Smith, who was amazed by the technology that they were giving them to use in the film, he said, that's 50 years old.
Right? Yeah.
That's 50 years old. And Smith was like, really? And the guy said, yeah. Why do you think we're giving it to you? Just you know, it gets me thinking about what we don't know that they have. But you're right, Mike, it's hypothetical. There's no doubt about that. I can't say for a fact that it exists or whatever. Just a final one, Mike, because you're obviously you're on a deadline as well. Great to have you back, mate. It's great to have you back after the summer. What we over here believe every rule in the book is being broken. All the European Union rules about countries leaving are being broken. The rules specifically state when a country leaves and triggers Article 50, everybody's got 2 years to do a deal. At the end of the 2 years, if there's a deal, well and good. If there isn't a deal, tough shit, Paddy, as we say in Ireland, and you go yes. and do your own thing. They're adding on periods, Mike, transition periods, which were going to be 3 years to 2022. Now the Tony Blairs of the world and the Alistair Darlings and the press are saying we might need a transition period. They're basically saying, Mike, we might not leave the EU for many years. I suppose we had to expect this, right?
Yeah, we did. I mean, again, the British people overcame massive election fraud to basically force their will. And the globalists don't care what ordinary people want or don't want. You have people like George Soros who go to bed at night dreaming of a single golden throne for all of planet Earth with their particular derriere sitting in it. And the European Union was a stepping stone toward the New World Order, global government, the North American Union, the same thing. They were going to form all these multi-nation unions. Then they were going to merge all of those under this one world government. And people are really digging their heels in because they're starting to see the downside of a one world government, which is this flooding of refugees, culture shock, all the crime, contagious diseases coming into countries that eradicated them. So far, it's all downside for ordinary people. It's kind of interesting when you look back in the history books and you just read these glowing accounts of Alexander the Great and what an amazing conqueror he was. And then you go past it and you realize that the people who were on those invasion routes, they didn't make out so well.
No, they did not, Mike.
You know, but history tends to honor the aggressor and the victor rather than the humanitarian.
Folks, go to whatreallyhappened.com if you haven't before. Bookmark it. Listen to Mike's programs daily. Terrific broadcaster and terrific researcher as well. Mike, thanks a million. We'll catch up again, no doubt, next month. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much again for having me.
Great stuff, Mike. Have a great show today. Michael Rivero, live there from Oahu in Hawaii. Top man. And you heard him on Thursday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Patricia came back on to say maybe because the people who controlled these hurricanes didn't want to move them. What does Mike think about HAARP? I've asked Mike about HAARP before, Patricia, and he's not convinced of the capability of HAARP and believes it's still a very experimental thing. Now, I don't agree with that. Of course I don't agree with that, but that's fine. It's okay to disagree. But that's what he would have said about that. So there you are. I mean, I believe they have the technology, not only to accelerate hurricanes, but to create them. I also believe they have the technology to set off tectonic movements and to create earthquakes. I really do believe that, but obviously I can't prove it. I can't prove it. But we've covered so many stories over the years of events that happened around other events, and you connect dots, and they're not tenuous dots to connect. They're, you know, pretty easy dots to connect, and you come to the conclusion, well, the reason why in 1976 or 1977 there was a treaty signed by many countries, it was 48 then, I think it's 77 now, a treaty not to manipulate the weather, is because they could manipulate the weather, in my opinion. or even 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, richieallen.co.uk and fabradiointernational.com. Here's a bit of Bruce the Boss Springsteen and a song called Badlands. Dr. Nick Begich joins me in the next hour. I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure you'll have questions for Nick on the subject. I'll tell you more about that after the music. Love this song. Back in a minute. Yeah, Bruce the Boss Springsteen. The show is 3 years old tomorrow, the Richie Allen Show, in association with davidicke.com. I'm not going to mark it with a show tomorrow because there isn't anything I could do tomorrow. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do a phone-in and have, you know, the sycophantic thing of people telling me on air how great the program is and all of that. It isn't great. I'm not great. It just is a platform for people who've got important things to say those things in a place of patience and a place of tolerance. That's why the programme was set up. So I'm not going to do that. What I will do before finishing the programme today, it's worth sticking around for, is I'll do what I did last year. There's several people I want to thank. And like a fool, I didn't make a list today, but I'm going to scribble a quick list in between breaks. There's a few people I want to thank at the end of it. It is quite an extraordinary thing to be coming to the end of year three for the programme, when after 3 months of it, it didn't look like we'd see 6 months because it was very difficult in the very beginning. But here we are anyway. I'm not modest, by the way. I've never been modest in my life. I'm a brash, outspoken, opinionated, egotistical Irishman who isn't modest. So when I tell you that I am not important and this show is of no greater importance than any other show, I mean it. What it is an opportunity for people who've got things that need to be said, but they are precluded from speaking on commercial television or radio. This is a platform for them to do that in a place where they can do it without being ridiculed, harassed or insulted. Challenged, I challenge my guests quite a lot, but nicely challenge them. And that's what it is. And it's thanks to David Icke himself and to a few others who I'll mention before the end of the programme. It's the top of the hour. Time for a quick break. When we come back, Nick Begich will join me. Special guy Nick, been speaking to me since I began doing this type of programme back in Spain some years ago. Nick Begich, after these.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We are offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the flower of life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's VBRATION.com/Richie. Thank you.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And a footnote to what I said just before the break. 3 years in, this is verifiably the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. This is your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, TuneIn Radio and RichieAllen.co.uk. My next guest began speaking with me when I made programmes like this for the first time back in Spain about 10 years ago. He's a remarkable man. And he's one of those guys we mention every now and then. If I started doing his resume or his curriculum vitae, as we say here, we'd lose half the programme. He co-authored the amazing Angels Don't Play This Harp. He's also written Earth Rising and Earth Rising 2. I can't recommend those books highly enough. He's the son of the late US congressman from Alaska, Nick Begich Sr., of course, and he's a former president of the Alaska Federation of Teachers and Anchorage Council of Education. Like I said, his resume, we would be here doing it all day long. For 20 years, I'm guessing, or more as well, he's been challenging globalism, challenging mainstream media and the globalist narrative, and doing that in a brilliant way. We've seen him on so many TV shows, BBC television, we've seen him on Sky, we've seen him on many documentaries. Now, his website is earthpulse.com. Bookmark the website, earthpulse.com. And earlier this year, in fact, after we'd spoken to him back in January, he made a terrific interview, discussion with one of the InfoWars reporters, and it was about something which is very dear to our hearts, the disconnect between people, the emotional disconnection between people, which has never been greater than it is now. Why can't people connect emotionally or spiritually with their fellow human beings? Why is it happening? What part is technology playing in that, and much more besides? The video that Nick did is on earthpulse.com. I'll tweet it out. It's always brilliant to welcome back our old pal, the great Dr. Nick Begich. You look well, my friend. We're on radio, but I can see you on camera. You're looking well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. And it's my pleasure to be back with you today on this topic. So, you know, the whole idea of, in all the work I've done in technology, you know, this is what people ask about, you know, is really solution oriented. And when you really get down to it, it fundamentally comes back to, you know, what are we fundamentally as human beings? How do we relate to each other? And when you think about sort of the distance created between us, you know, we thought that this ability to communicate, you know, globally so simply would be this great boom to open dialogue and innovation. And in some respects, it has been. But in others, it's narrowed our focus and it's kind of distanced us from the physical connection with people, where we actually are sitting with someone, exchanging not just the verbal information, but also the energy that comes from that exchange. And you don't get that same dimension when you start putting electronic media between us and each other. And fundamentally what happens is the electronic media becomes not just a gateway for communications, but also for others, a gateway to us and to some level of our awareness or consciousness or certainly our thinking.
Nick, you take this back to the advent of television, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, when I think about it, you know, television as it started and advertising as it started, a way to kind of move populations, television was the greatest of innovations in that respect, in keeping people informed. But when you consider the effect of modern communications, where a lot more is learned about how the brain works, how we respond, not just to visual images, color, light, sound, and so on, but then how do you move people more effectively in a certain direction? That's the mystery of advertising, right? Well, today, you know, given 20 years of research in the issues of mind effects, you know, it's pretty clear where that is evolved to. And presently, political outcomes, economic outcomes, and really the direction in which society has gone has largely and increasingly be driven by media, starting, of course, with television being the big push, and even before radio. I mean, when you think about radio as a vehicle for getting information out, what an innovation. And, you know, now today, instantly, globally, information flows.
Do you know what's interesting, Nick? I came up in commercial radio, and I learned a lot about the genesis of radio, about the dawn of radio. And I'm going to keep referring to the video you did with Alex's reporter on InfoWars, because it is brilliant. It's funny, Nick. You did that about a month after you were last on with us, sometime in March, and I watched
right.
it, and I thought it was brilliant. And I thought, well, I'll leave him alone because it's only been a little while since you were on. And it went on the back burner. I should have really gotten you back on sooner to talk about it because it's hugely important. We listened to radio, Nick. And radio is an intimate medium. And it was beaten into me as a presenter, a young presenter. Richie, you're speaking to one person. It's an intimate one-to-one medium. You're having an intimate conversation with a listener. However, Nick, when you go back to when radio came into people's homes, We listened to it together back in the beginning, and we engaged right. with one another while we were listening. Is that right?
Right. That's right. And it was more of a conversation stimulator. You know, afterwards there was discussion, there was interaction, people were interacting about what they had heard. Today, it's not. You're absolutely correct. It's an individual event, a listening event. It's not a family event on a Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely right. And that's hugely important. And then television came along and changed that and changed the dynamic of how we receive media. What's amazing, earthpulse.com, by the way, this is really good work that Nick is doing here. It's very important work. There's a physical manifestation in people that are being held in thrall or in sway by the media. And you discussed this, Nick, and this is fascinating. You can see this physically in people.
Right. And it's, you know, what happens is you actually fall into almost a light trance-like state when you're engaged with media. In fact, just look around any restaurant, any place where people are gathered, and you'll see it. People have completely are lost in their devices, you know, even yeah. getting run over in traffic, right? I mean, it's become an obsession, and yet it is now the intermediary. I mean, consider it. It is the intermediary between two people communicating in person as a substitute. Even in places where people are gathered on obviously on a date, you'll see couples not communicating with each other, but interacting with devices. This has really altered the fabric, as I see it, of not just information and communication, but how we gather and exchange ideas. And what has happened is the information age has really not enlightened us by broadening our view and understanding of others. It's in fact narrowed us, because people tend to gravitate to only the media that resonates with what they believe in. We tend to focus more on what reinforces rather than what enlightens and educates, which is diversity and a different sort of view of the news than we get now. And I think that's, again, an important change that's occurred in the advent of modern technology. And, you know, we warned about this back in 2000 when I wrote with the late James Roderick, Earth Rising, and it was really the direction in which technology was taking us and the lack of humanity within it that gets lost in the shuffle. And when I did that with Alex Jones, it was really unanticipated. We had laid down quite a bit of video that week with a number of his team. And what happened in a dinner discussion the just before the weekend when I was scheduled to head out, we ended up in this discussion about consciousness. And Alex wanted to shoot film right away. And it was really contrarian to what I ever expected to be doing with Alex. But the point was, we agreed to do it. It was going to be 10 minutes. It turned into 45 and was probably the most powerful thing I've done with Alex or in really a number of years with anyone. And what happened in that dialogue was it was more of a discussion about how do people change? You know, what do we really do about all this stuff? And what's the effect of it? And the bottom line is, for me at least, is recognizing the divinity in each of us that changes the way in which we come at each other, if you will. And I think that no matter which of the major traditions, religious traditions you embrace in the world, they all speak to being created in the image and likeness of God in this sort of a hologram, if you will, a microcosm of the universal. That's what we are as human beings, as I see it. And so when you look into the eyes, the window of the soul of another person, what you're looking at is divinity within humanity. And, you know, coming at each other in a different way from that perspective is possible, and being very different in terms of political or belief systems. I mean, I think about my own family, you know, in terms of politics, and we're all heavily engaged. I got a brother that was a mayor and a U.S. senator, another brother that was a state senator. We are Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians in my family, and we all get together and have these incredible political holiday debates.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we walk away as brothers and sisters, not metaphorically, actually. And I think metaphorically the same is possible in the larger context of our societies. And we've lost that bit of humanity that I believe was driven by mutual respect and recognition ultimately of our divinity. And that's what we need to recapture. If we really want to see solutions, we have to recapture that recognition of what we are, who we are, and in the context of where we live, start affecting change, not from the standpoint of fear and paranoia, but from the standpoint of remembering the power that we truly have within us.
The brilliant Dr. Nick Begich, gentleman as he is live on the line from Anchorage in Alaska today. Earthpulse.com is Nick's website. I recommend it. And there is a link on the homepage to the video we're talking about. Watch it later on. Don't do it now. Pay attention, children. Don't be so fidgety. It's how to break the zombie trance. Now, it's funny because we sometimes get annoyed when we're in beautiful parks, Nick, in the northwest of England, and we see people walking around. There's a beautiful lake over there, wonderful trees, wonderful landscape, topography, and all of that. And you have people on their phones. And I nearly got to the stage where I started to kind of develop a bit of Tourette's, Nick. I started to get a bit, you know, curmudgeonly, where I'd say things to people. I'd cough and say zombie. Then I thought, that's very impolite. It's wrong. But you brought up zombie. It is. Now, what you described there something very important, the echo chamber. How the technology has led us to seek out those who agree with us and those who affirm us, which is terribly destructive. You talked there about the wonderful conversations that you had and have with your family and your friends where you disagree, you argue, you might snipe, but you're totally happy with your ideas being challenged. And something else, while we're talking now, a listener called Lynn has just sent me an email, and Lynn said, listening to Nick there, it occurs to me, Lynn says, that when you're chatting away with your friend, what do? You touch them. You sometimes touch them. You touch them on the shoulder. There's an energy exchange, right? And she's listening to you, and this is coming to her mind. And what this device is doing, it's actually making us contemptuous of one another. It's removing the physical contact, the energy exchange. So the obvious question is, Dr. Nick Begich, is this deliberate, Nick? Was that considered when these devices...
That's an interesting question because, you know, it breaks down a lot of aspects of us as either a deliberate effect or a side effect. It is the effect of the kind of technology that we utilize to interact with one another. And the bubble effect of it that you spoke about, we have to deliberately seek out, I think, contrarian information from our normal in order to really reflect on it. Because otherwise what happens is what we've seen is something occurs because it reflects more of the reality of the larger world than the one we might live in, like Trump getting elected or Brexit. And then the opposition to this, because they lived in such an isolated, self-enforcing world, it's a total shock to them, okay, to their system, because they had no preparation for it. They've sort of insulated themselves until the hammer drops and something occurs that they weren't expecting. You really need to dig in and seek out that alternative contrarian view to balance your own and recognize that people don't come to it most of the time out of some sinister belief. They really come to it out of some fact pattern that they've evolved. And this is where I think recognizing that about most conversations that we're in are well-meaning based on knowledge that people hold. So if we listen carefully, we'll learn a couple things. We'll learn what information they hold that we don't, that might enlighten us, or vice versa. We may learn what holes are there that we can fill with knowledge. And listening provides that, and recognizing that the other person is as divinely created as you, and we ought to give them the courtesy of hearing them. And I think that's really it. And I don't care whether it's on a microcosmic one-on-one basis or whether it's done by nations and nation states. And having the experience on both ends of that spectrum in my family, I can tell you the mechanism is exactly the same. It has to do with respect and recognition. And to change the world, it has to start there. And I think we get lost in that. Technology now separates us. It is a wall between us. It is the priest between us and divinity in the 21st century. The priest of the new technological revolution and evolution that we've now placed between us. And that priest collects all of our data, all of our information, and funnels that for commercial, political, and governmental purposes. And this is a huge invasion of who we are on so many fundamental levels. And the real answer is, why? You know, why do they seek this knowledge? Why do they seek this control? It's because of the recognition of all of these projects that I've spoken on for the last 22 years regarding the mind and consciousness. They recognize that we are that potent power. When we lose our fear and anxiety, where our higher states of consciousness can actually be reached, because it cannot happen when you're in fear and anxiety, these higher states cannot be reached. So mind control is the simplest of all. Keep people in a constant state of agitation, and the odds are very few, if any, will emerge out of that soup. And that's exactly what's happened. And when you look at the media interaction today, it feeds on that. And actually, the contextual nature of media today really shapes culture more than it is shaped by culture.
Nick,
it is programming.
It is programming. There's a lot of questions coming in from listeners, and we'll get to as many as we can in the time that we have. Thanks for doing this today, by the way. Another busy day for you. It's always great to have you on the program. It must be said, on this, so on the subjects you cover, for me, reading you, reading David, who I know personally, of course, the late great Jim Mars, somebody of course you knew as well, and Jordan, hugely important in my development and in my coming to believe. But I'm like you, I'm absolutely open to people shooting down my belief, but to my belief that it is deeply, deeply sinister, and it is deliberate to keep us from understanding what we are and what we're capable of collectively if we stand up to it. Loads of questions on this. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. The great Nick Begich is on the line from Anchorage in Alaska. Nick, people are asking, do you feel that there's a connection with between this and the coming scary DARPA, the Pentagon technological wing, this coming kind of transhumanist thing that we're very worried about? Do you think there's a connection between what we're talking about? That's question number one. And then another listener wants me to ask you about children. Why is it that when smartphones came in, people above a certain age couldn't be, as we say in Ireland, Nick, couldn't be arsed with the smartphones, couldn't be bothered with them, but yet children are desperate to get their hands on them, to the point where schools in the UK are reporting children are getting help for addiction to these devices? Take the first question first, Nick, the transhumanist agenda. What do you think of that and the connection?
Well, you know, things are dramatically changing in terms of how humans are treated, and we are more commodities. I mean, in terms of how elites look at us, this is not the divinity in which we arrived on this planet and who we are. And this is, I think, when you look at Pentagon planning, military planning generally, they take the most paranoid, darkest view of everything because that's their job. They are the paranoid thinkers within our cultures because that's their job. They need to think of every horrible thing that could ever happen and try and build a plan around it. And believe me, they got a whole bunch of plans on the playbook.
Yeah.
But the point is, that's why in civil society, at least, we like to think, at least, that militaries don't control our governments, because we would come to very different conclusions than militaries would come to, given the nature of their thinking and the responsibilities that they have. Not the same. Today, so many governments and militaries are intertwined in what Eisenhower warned us about so many decades ago now, of the military-industrial, and now I would add, as many have, the academic complex, that has really started to shape too much of our institutions, because the amount of money spent on warfare, quite frankly, it's a big business. So is a lot of other things when you think about multinationals and the elites, whether it's the pharmaceutical industry, aerospace, communications, and so on. Most of these establishment organizations have been built on the status quo, which is death and separation of people. And fear, and maintaining a certain level of fear to get people to do things that otherwise maybe humans aren't so inclined to do, like killing each other.
Yeah.
The technology today now, when you talk about children, several things are happening. Gaming, for instance, which are on all of these smartphones that kids are playing with, are, when they develop the games, they use three-dimensional MRIs to look at the brain activity of children playing these games to determine how to stimulate specific centers of the brain associated with the same ones associated with sexual stimulation or drug addiction. So the idea is literally to get you addicted to the game by knowing exactly how that light sound interaction affects you on those levels. And I mean, this is what has essentially happened. So children at a very young age are habituating to systems, whether it's television, video games that are designed to stimulate at a heightened way reactions within children. And that creates these addictive behaviors that are then, you know, obvious to, you know, to any parent who's dealing with it. Take the phone away and see what happens. I mean, it's incredible what you can see happen with these kids. So that's the design of the games. There's no restriction on it. That's what they're intended to do. And guess what? They really, really work. And that's what you're seeing when you make those observations.
Nick,
and
there,
I see younger children habituating to this.
Sorry to interrupt there, because this is hugely important. A few months ago, Nick, well, it's more like 8 or 9 months ago, I picked up one of these virtual reality headsets that you connect to the smartphone. Now, the reason I did it is I've never been a gamer at all. But because this was coming up a lot on the program, I decided I'd get one to have a look at it, so that if I was to make a comment on it, it would be, I won't say informed, Nick, but mildly informed. And I got this headset. And it's very, very bizarre, and it's weird, and it definitely does things to you that maybe I don't have the vocabulary to express. But I asked David Icke. Now, David has quoted you many times over the years in his books. I said to David, what do you think? And David said, I'll tell you what, and it's amazing because you've said this yourself. David said, I think, Richie, there's a very strong possibility that this virtual reality, and now the new iPhone has got augmented reality, which we might talk about in a minute. What it's doing, Richie, is it's taking us yet another step away from who we really are.
Right.
It's another barrier, and that didn't occur to me, Nick.
And the face recognition feature for IDing also will tell whether you're happy, sad, frightened. It'll denote not just who you are, but your emotional state at the time, and that's going to be recorded. Now you start to think about your traffic and your internet searches now being connected to how you actually feel, what you think and how you feel. Now you've got a little higher resolution of the human being. You've got your digital doorway to your house kicked in a little more effectively as they dissect who you are as a human being, as far as they can tell from all of your data interaction. Now, when you think about data interaction, 3,000 contacts through your internet, which is a lot, but it's not very much when you consider people's general usage through your electronic interfaces. That's not very many, whether it's your phone or pad or computer. But from that, you can tell what somebody who lives with you for 20 years knows about you.
Yeah.
And you can also tell and predict what you will do better than you will predict yourself. That's where the technology is today. Now you add facial recognition, you add all of the video streaming. I mean, you're in Great Britain, the most monitored population on the planet right now. You have no presumption of privacy in downtown London than if you were standing in the middle of a mic'd up recording studio, because that's how it works today. And that's how they unravel crime. You know, they just go to the crime location, start unraveling where everybody went, looking at the video feeds, and then you can also look at audio feeds. And all of this is being collected. And the idea is, well, at some point, all of this gets sorted. And then at some point, you have a real profile of every living soul that ever interfaced with a machine.
Their likes, their loves, their desires, their needs, their fears, you've got everything. Now, nobody over the years did more to explain the practicalities of, you know, mind control, how it could be physically done. None of us will ever forget the shock on Jesse Ventura's face when he went to meet you and you showed him how this could be done. So our listeners are asking us today, you've shown over the years how brainwaves could be manipulated from afar. Are the phones and the tablets now making it easier for a nefarious presence to do things, to make us think a certain way, to make us acquiesce? Go ahead.
It's very easy. Any electromagnetic carrier, whether it's cell phones, cell towers, the power grid itself can even be modulated to affect people in certain ways. What you're really trying to do is create a coupling effect where certain brain activity or brain waves will lock onto an external signal, whether it's flickering light, certain manipulation of sound, and electromagnetic fields can create this coupling effect. And then what happens is your general attitude changes. You can change emotional states of large populations applying this technology to anything. On the cell phone basis or on a device that's particularly catering to you, you can even tailor that, you know, to specific populations or specific viewing groups or individuals for that matter. The technology, as it gets more invasive in terms of where it is and what it does, actually provides a higher and higher resolution of who we are, and then an ability to manipulate who we are through the feeds that come our direction. And this is, I mean, this is just in the overt, obvious ways. And then when you start considering emotional variability and the things, for instance, on a phone, you could interpret a person's facial expression as being unhappy and then feed back a signal that changes your mental state to one of a little more blissful. Well, you might like that idea. It's like putting perfume in a room, except for it's still just covering up the stink.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You
yeah,
still
yeah.
need to fix the underlying problems. You just can't mask them. And this is what I think we start to lose as we move further and further in this dimension. For instance, even post-traumatic stress syndrome, the answer isn't stop fighting wars or find a better way to do it or something. It's instead, let's figure out how to wipe people's memories clean so they can't remember what horrible things happened. Well, you know, that might work and might seem like a great idea until you start to wonder, well, what sinister thing might the government have our military men and women do that they might want to blank out their memories?
Yeah.
Because it flies in the face of every value every human being that's a living soul would ever represent as human, it violates. I think we need to really scrutinize consciousness and what's happening within our consciousness when it's being manipulated on the scale in which it is. And the simplest method, again, I want to emphasize this, is create a situation where people feel anxious, fearful. That is the gateway to turning off your super awareness, your ability to reach these higher states of consciousness and make the kinds of analytical decisions that aren't related to flight and fight responses or a herd kind of mentality.
Get our, as David would say, get our energy, get our state of being into a low vibrational state, and that's when we're wide open, is how he would put it. Massive amount of comments coming in here. Alison Lyman is listening to this program in Oslo in Norway. She's obviously not Norwegian. Well, maybe she is. Maybe she married somebody called Lyman, but I shouldn't be making assumptions like that. But she says, is Nick worried that the next phase of this is implantables? If you get children and young men and women addicted to the technology in the way that you described, that it will be easy to get them, you know, to accept implantables. I know you've talked about in the last 12 months companies in America that have gotten their workers to accept a chip under the skin. We saw that, I think, in Ohio or somewhere like that. Nick, this is the sort of stuff that we go out on commercial radio. I know there are listeners saying, those two guys are crazy bastards, you know. And we're not crazy, and this isn't crazy. So what about the implantable as the next stage, do you think?
Well, actually, even in government of Mexico, in their Justice Department, a couple hundred people were given microcircuits to track their movements. The idea of utilizing microcircuits for lots of different reasons. I mean, part of the big sale pitch is of human enhancement. For instance, they're talking about corneas that you can have implanted in your eyes that you can interface with your cell phone or your computer and have a live screen, or that'll also give you enhanced vision, give you infrared, ultraviolet, things outside of your normal scope of vision. So, I mean, I think what's happening, a lot of this is augmented technology as an extension of self is how a lot of children view it. It's part of them, you know, and how they attach to things This becomes the sort of the expressive model. More and more of that, I think, is potentially there. Implantable technologies, you're going to see that become a fashionable thing, and people not really contemplating the trade-offs, the potential trade-offs, and the exposure that you have to personal privacy. And some people don't value personal privacy because classical education doesn't teach us what we need to know. Now, experience does. That's why we get a stronger knee-jerk on personal privacy out of, say, Germany, especially East Germany, where there's a recent memory of Stasi and Hitler, you know, where people go, you know what? Information is really important and personal privacy is really sacred. And they remember it because they know what it's like when it's violated. We have forgotten because 200 years of relative complacency in the United States from the time the British were kicking our doors in, right, to quarter their troops. So personal privacy in the 21st century needs to be readdressed. What it means needs to be addressed. And the effect of consciousness on what we do and its interference deliberately by militaries and others needs to be suppressed. That is a violation of the very essence of who we are. No technologies without fully informed consent should be allowed. And with children particularly, utilizing technologies deliberately to stimulate them in a certain way for certain outcomes, would you allow your children to be drugged without your consent? Would you allow them to be indoctrinated without your consent? Because that's the kind of technology and the applications of technology that we're talking about in this century. And we are the gatekeepers, this generation, the gatekeepers of our personal liberty and as it's expressed in our personal privacy.
And now we're into solutions, because what we've covered thus far with Dr. Nick Begich, it's earthpulse.com, by the way, earthpulse. Nick has been talking about the emotional disconnect between people. The part technology has played in that, what it has done to us, made us contemptuous of one another, of physical contact, of emotional contact. It's made echo chambers out of our, you know, our spaces on social media, where we seek out affirmation, where we seek out people who agree with us. This is wonderful stuff. It's hugely important. It's happening. We're into solutions now, Nick. You know, there are obviously people listening to this program with youngsters, and they will be overwhelmed when they hear this. How do you get to people? How do you speak to people who are going to be under enormous pressure to present their children with these devices? What can they do, Nick?
Well, I mean, it's you're the parent. You got to be the parent. And it's restriction. I mean, it's a limit. I mean, it's how much time do you really want them on? You can't totally turn them off, but you've got to limit it. And you've got to broaden their horizon in terms of actual interactions, physical interactions. And a lot of parents don't do that either these days. You know, quite frankly, people are themselves lost in sort of that stress and avoidance cycle, which is really what a lot of the electronics is. It's avoidance of personal interaction. And I think you just have to push into that personal interaction. Look your children in the eye in that conversation. Look the people around you in the eyes when you have that conversation, any conversation, and start connecting on that level. Get the machines out from in between you. I mean, even the simple interactions, when you're sitting in the restaurant ordering, don't be looking at your phone. Connect with the person serving you. They're not a waitress or a waiter. They're a human being. They represent divinity at a fundamental level. If we just can appreciate a little bit of each other in that way, including our children, everybody feels that. Everybody knows that. They recognize that. It resonates internally with the core of what we are as divine beings. Start there. Connect. Talk to people. Recognize that, and I think we begin this chain reaction of events. See what happens. You'll be amazed. When you actually meet someone and you see them as divine and you feel that in your consciousness and in your soul as you're talking to them, they know it. They feel it. people come together on that. It builds their ability to move through their day just as effectively as yours. The solutions are that. Don't underestimate what you do. I'll give you, I had a very deep discussion with my oldest son, who's 40, about running for public office, which is sort of a genetic defect in my family, I think. But
predisposed.
We're having this very big discussion about knowing, absolute knowing that this is what you're to do, because I said you can have a lifetime of politics and have an impact, or you can be walking down the street and cast a smile at the right person at that strategic second and have a greater impact on the world than your entire career. I said, you don't know. There are no small things. But what you do have to know is that's where you're going to register your life energy, and that that's the place that you're called to do it. And otherwise, the effect of being there will have no effect at all. You're better off knowing you're following a right path for yourself and rendering that smile that's easily given and may change the world. So I say to everyone listening, there are no great or small things. There's just things being done with the right intention. Look into the eyes of your neighbor, see their divinity, and then begin speaking to that. And you will be respectful. You will hear each other differently. And you can walk away disagreeing, but still recognizing each other as sovereign souls.
Do me a favor, don't leave it as long before coming back, will you? That's a magnificent way to leave that. This is cutting edge work. It's cutting edge work. It's earthpulse.com. Links to Earth Rising 1 and 2 and Angels Don't Play That Harp, but also links to a lot of information, including how to break the zombie trance, which is where we came in on this, are there. We first spoke back in 2009 when I was doing this in Spain. And I know you're very generous when people contact you for various shows, TV and radio, and you pretty much do everything, which means you practice what you preach. And I'll say something, Nick. Some months ago, having spent probably weeks and weeks and weeks in a studio and in an office, never getting out and being connected to the internet and the radio studio and the phones, I happened to stumble out of the house and to a local pub, and this isn't an Irish drinking story, but to a local pub with my better half, Caroline. And we sat in the sunshine, and pretty soon we're surrounded by people whom we didn't know. They didn't know us, we didn't know them, having a conversation. It went on for hours. I swear, Nick, it felt like a three-week holiday. Do you know that? Human contact.
Indeed.
Human contact. How extraordinary.
And this is the secret of it. Really, it is about that. We can lift each other up, and as we do, we lift ourselves. And all boats rise with the rising tide. And there's a tide rising because a lot of people are starting to pay attention.
Earthpulse.com. You've just been listening to Dr. Nick Begich live from Anchorage in Alaska. Great pleasure, Nick. I look forward to speaking to you again in the very near future. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
The wonderful Dr. Nick Begich there live on the line, as I said, from Anchorage in Alaska. Check out earthpulse.com. That's his website, where you'll find out lots more about the work he's doing on connecting people emotionally and disconnecting them from the technology. Fascinating stuff. I will take a very quick break. When I come back, I've got a couple of things to tell you, and we won't be too far away from wrapping up then.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The FDA imprisoned Dr. Wilhelm Reich for his work with orgone energy in the 1950s. They knew he was onto something. At Vibration, our mission is to help raise the planet's vibrational frequency by getting our orgone to as many people as possible. We're offering a free orgone pendant embossed with the Flower of Life. We just ask a small global shipping and handling fee. To find out more and claim your free pendant, just go to vibration.com/Richie. That's VBRATION.com/Richie. Thank you.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
And it's exactly 15 minutes to the top of the hour, Thursday, the 14th of September 2017. So the program is 3 years old tomorrow. I thought about doing something tomorrow, but it wasn't feasible. The day of the week is all wrong in terms of we wouldn't have the live audience that maybe we would need to do the sort of thing I had in mind. And I'll be back on air with Sunday View anyway. This programme will be live Sunday to Thursday, effectively right up until Christmas week. That's the way it is. Just over 3 years ago, Ikey said, look, don't take that commercial radio job. Do this in your own way. Interview men and women that you want to talk to. Don't be influenced by anybody, let alone me. And I will put it on davidike.com nightly. And if you put it on a loop after you do the live show, it'll be playing on davidike.com all day long. And I didn't want to do it. I wanted to take the job I was offered in York. But I thought that I've often been wrong when it comes to making decisions. So I decided to do it. And we began interviewing two, sometimes three, but mostly two people every night of the week in the beginning who, as I said earlier on, who have a credible story to tell about either themselves or a credible challenge to the information being disseminated by the mainstream media. And of course, I've worked in radio for many years as a successful producer and as a successful presenter, so I could bring mainstream production values to bear on what we're doing. Now, we're at it nearly 3 years and we've grown a very, very huge audience. And I think we've done that, again, not through modesty, but not because of anything necessarily that I do, but because of the quality of men and women who come on and speak to their experiences and give you a different take on things. Yes, the production values help, and it helps that we've been able to kind of gather momentum over 3 years. But here we are, 3 years old, and I'm pretty happy about that. And I hope that as long as it's needed, however long it's needed, that we do programmes like this, I hope that we can continue to do it. I really do. And I want to just thank a couple of people while we... this all sounds very official, and it sounds kind of up my own arse. And I'm sorry if it does. I don't mean it to, but I want to thank a couple of people. Listen, David Icke goes without saying, without David's interest and perseverance, there wouldn't be a programme. I love the man. I'll say no more about him. I've said enough about him. He doesn't expect it. But without David Icke, we wouldn't be here. Jamie, obviously, Gareth, his sons, Linda, his ex-wife and his best mate. But Andrew Cheatham, Andrew, who works with David on the headlines page, huge help to me and to us. Aaron Calland and Simon Stewart make up the Richie Allen tiny team. Aaron looks after the website. Simon puts the videos on YouTube. It wouldn't be possible without those guys, because we live in an age when people want to get their information when it suits them. Without them, we wouldn't do as well as we do. There's no doubt about that. A massive shout out to three people, Jean-Ann Crowley in Dublin, Mark Bajerski and Patricia Braunschweiler, three amazing people who've been there with advice and support and have helped massively at times when things have been very difficult financially. They've helped, you know, generate money for the programme. Gina and Mark and Patricia, amazing people. I want to thank Chris Seeley, the wonderful Chris from dataclinic.com. Mark Atwood, who's an amazing guy, huge help as well. Kim Hutchison, livingisyoursoul.com, a wonderful woman. Sam King, Hayden Hewitt, Paul Ripley at Fab Radio, Patrick Gallagher. I'm not going to get in any way emotional, but I want to thank Jim Mars posthumously for putting up with my bullshit for years and phone calls in the middle of the night. Amazing guy. Jordan Maxwell. There's a lot of people, and I've been scribbling furiously, and there might be some people get cheesed off that they didn't get a mention. But don't be cheesed off. I'm not very good at this sort of thing. I do want to thank you, though, for financially supporting it, because we've reached the stage now where we can't monetize on YouTube anymore. I don't know if you saw the news today, but YouTube have got, well, Google has got very sophisticated equipment now that is basically analysing the dialogue in our videos, the script effectively, before we even put a title on it and before we publish it, and it's demonetizing everything. So now the programme is totally dependent on a couple of advertisers and on your support. Without that, there wouldn't be a programme. So to everybody who's donated, everybody, ever, since we started, whether it was 50p, a pound, £20, £50 over the years. Again, I could get very emotional. It's just an amazing thing to me that you think something is worthwhile spending a couple of bob on when money is as tight as it is. I really appreciate that. To those in financial difficulties, thanks for listening to the programme. It means just as much to me. You better believe it. And finally, the unbelievably amazing, generous, intelligent, the most loving human being that ever lived, Caroline Tisserand, my longtime fiancée, and a woman who puts up with me not being around, because I spend 15 hours a day doing this programme. That's the truth, by the way. And I do that as well on Saturdays. And I do it on Sundays. And she puts up with it for the greater good. She's a big mate of David's, and kind of understands that there's a reason why we do it. Without Caroline, there wouldn't be a programme either. And she's amazing. So that's really it, really. I'm sure there's one or two people I should have mentioned, but I didn't. But I will make it up to them in the future. So there you go. So that's pretty much it then for this week's programmes. Just want to point out, we've got some pretty special programmes lined up for next week. I suppose while I'm here, I should give out the donation details again. I've not done it for ages, and I don't like doing it. But if you want to give us an anniversary present, only if you can afford to, go to paypal.me, that's M for mother, E for echo, paypal.me/Richie Allen, paypal.me/Richie Allen, and make a donation to the programme. If you can't do it, don't worry about it. Don't give it a second thought. If you want to use a bank account to do it, if you go to richieallen.co.uk, there are bank account details there. That's richieallen.co.uk. There are bank account details there if you want to do it that way as well. You know, I really don't like doing it. You know, I've worked my entire life for a monthly wage from an employer, and it doesn't sit well with me that we do this, but we ask people to make a contribution. And I'm mindful that in the so-called truther industrial complex, there are hundreds of people basically stealing from people, lying to them, demanding that they donate to them for nothing at all, or promising things that they don't deliver. We don't ask that you pay for the Richie Allen Show. It's free. We ask that if you can, you make a contribution. There's no hard sell here. I'll keep making the programme one way or the other. But I do ask that if you can help out, remember to do it, because I don't ask for it. There are times I'd rather starve than ask. I get so embarrassed by asking. But if you want the, you know, if you want to keep the programme on air and you can help out, just help out. If you can't afford it, tell me to go and feck off. You can't afford it. And you'll never hear a word from me about that. You'll never hear a complaint. It will always be free. We will never make it subscription. Never. There will never be a website with a barrier that says you can only hear the program if you do this or you do that. It'll always be free. But support it. So again, to everybody I mentioned, thanks again. You have an absolutely amazing weekend. Sunday View returns on Sunday morning, where at 11 o'clock, you and I will have a look over the Sunday newspapers and try and make sense of them and look at one or two of the big stories as well. Don't forget, I've begun making the Dot Connector series with David Icke. I did that today. That's for subscribers to davidicke.com. I think it's worthwhile. Check out davidicke.com for more details on that. In the meantime, do stay in touch with davidicke.com. Do listen to the programmes of fabradiointernational.com. Please do. And stay in touch with us over the weekend on Facebook and on Twitter. What can I say about the wonderful Michael Rivero and Dr. Nick Begich? They're amazing guests. Typical, I think, of the quality of people who come on this programme. The programme will be podcasted. YouTube will be uploaded by Simon. It'll all be there for you to share away to your heart's content. I'm going to love you and leave you and say once again and for the final time, thank you so much for everything you've given to me. I will see you on Sunday morning, leaving you with this from Neil Young. I love you very much. See you Sunday. Bye.